Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome to another RCS Rocking Chair Session, volume 135, with cultural publisher and producer, Aaron Glickman. Welcome.
And former actor, or yes, still actor.
That's perhaps.
Wow.
What else do you do? What do you not do?
What do I not do? I don't know. I've done all kinds of things in my life. It's been a decent life to this point, and I've done a lot of interesting things. And this is very, it just fits right into it to sit here with you two to speak about whatever it is we speak about. It's just one more thing to add to the ensemble.
To the list. Well, we're very grateful that you were able to schedule us in and sit with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. This is great. Bakehouse.
Bakehouse Art Complex 2020. It's happening.
I love it. I like the Bakehouse. This is a great, great spot, the Bakehouse. Artists, art shows, creative people all congregated together, creating things. I love it. It is what Miami is all about. It's what Miami's been about for, the past 20 years. It's maybe even more at this point, art and culture, building a community. And this is a big part of it. So it's great to sit here with you two and talk.
When's the first time you stopped by the Big House? Do you remember your recollection? Don't say this is the first time.
No. I was here during Art Basel, and I saw the show. I've been back, I lived in LA for many years, and I've been back in Miami for a while now. So I came here. I don't know when the first time was. I had no idea what it was when I came, and. But I quickly learned and saw all the talented people here and realized it was a home for the Creative Miami set, and that's good. That's good. I imagine that since you guys are here so often that you find it very inspiring.
I think definitely so. I think the first time that I recall coming to the Bakehouse, you're not really sure what it is from the exterior, and plus the neighborhood it's in, like you wouldn't, it's off the beaten path, as we normally say. I think a lot of the art institutions are closer to more of the main roads, or they're like the better, whatever, like maybe promoted or whatever, but it's like a little gem. And then once you enter in the inside is when you discover that there's so much going on in here, I think.
Tons of stuff. Painters, sculptors.
Everything.
Visual arts is huge in Miami.
Yeah.
Performing arts, not so much.
It's getting there.
We're working on that. It's tough.
Film is getting there, but performing arts definitely needs.
Well, I was just at the opening party right before this interview for NAPD.
Tell us a little bit about
that. Okay. Yeah, the opening party for NAPD that was sponsored by the Greater Miami Conventions and Visitors Bureau. And they had a person there from the tax offices. And I left a little early because I had to get here for this interview, but he was going to speak, and I met him. He was very, a nice guy. He was going to speak about the tax incentives.
Ooh.
So hopefully that will help bring
back
the film. But that, film isn't performing arts necessarily. There is an element. Film is everything, right? Film is everything. It's music. It's acting. It's photography. It's everything. But the performing arts are theater and music and the symphony and that in this city is lacking. We do have some great cultural institutions, but the theater scene used to be more vibrant. I was a theater major in college.
Really?
Oh yeah, I went to Florida State. I was a theater major, and. That's an interesting story. I wasn't a very good student. It's true. And then I auditioned for a play, and I got a nice role in it. And it was a comedy, and I was funny. I had no problem being a ham. And the second I got on stage, and I had that audience laughing, and I was mugging, and I wasn't a great actor at that moment. I think I became a decent actor, but I was good at making people laugh and mugging and holding the stage. And the second I did that, I was like, well, this is what I'm doing, you know? And then boom, I became a great student. And I learned all about, you know, theater and the arts. You know, you can learn about through theater history, through art history, whatever. You can learn about all the different things that have happened in this world.
Yeah, in humanity.
So it was really a great, for me. And I used to come back to Miami, and, you know, growing up here, there wasn't a lot of arts and culture. It was all sports, sports and drugs. That was Miami. And we romanticized that, we romanticized the cocaine era. We romanticized, it was this great era and their bad boy, the Hurricanes and all that. So, but when I came back, and one of the few cultural institutions we had that was of relevance was the Coconut Grove Playhouse, and of course that's not there anymore.
So sad.
And they just had they just had meetings about restoring it, and that was a shit show. So it's when politicians get involved in cultural decisions, nothing good happens. So,
but at least they didn't tear it down yet, because that was the plan, right? They were like trying to get rid of it.
No, I don't think they were trying to get rid of it. I think they were trying to build a theater that was more. First off, that building is misplaced on that land, and it always has been. It's an old movie house that was never meant to be a theater. And nostalgia notwithstanding, sometimes you need to make pragmatic decisions, and to build a state-of-the-art theater there in that highly affluent neighborhood, I think where people could walk and have dinner, and that was a Lort theater. It was an important theater in the country. Coconut Grove Playhouse was an important theater in this country. Uh-huh. So the fact that it ended so abruptly and poorly is really a blight on our community. And the fact that what's happened now. Preservation, and I think that preservation was used by people that just simply didn't want that to be redeveloped into a theater. It's my understanding that the land goes back to the state at some point, and people can auction it off, and maybe a developer can then buy it and build whatever structure he wants there. And that seems like they used preservation as an excuse to delay it. But I don't know. That's just my my amateur political reading of it. But that was a very important theater, and we need to concentrate on getting theater back here. And hopefully, if we can pass these tax incentives and the film industry can come back, then we can see more actors and production people come back to this community. I was just doing my Glickman Media, which is my company, is a sponsor of the Miami Film Festival this year, and I did the artist interviews, the Miami artist interviews recently for the festival for the Miami filmmakers, and I was speaking to one of the directors in the interview. We were talking about some of the challenges in Miami, and she produced a film. Actually, it's an art film. She produced about an artist. She produced a film. It's a fictional film about the artist Rifa, who was killed by the police.
Oh my goodness.
So she did that. That's going to be in the film festival this year. And apparently the Miami Beach police shut her down during the production. But we were talking about the difficulty she had in getting extras and production people and all that stuff. And it's a direct result of the incentives going away. And me being a political person, I was at an event once with Rick Scott, and I said to him, I said, we need to get these incentives back.
Yeah, because they had them for a while, and then
We had the TV show
and things happened, and then they took them away, right?
They took them away. And so I say to Rick Scott, I go, when are we getting the incentives back? And he's like, I go, we need the incentives. He goes, do we? And he just kind of walks away. And to me, speaking to, I'm a conspiracy theorist a little bit. So if the Republicans they take away the incentives, who does that get rid of? Well, that gets rid of a large portion of people that are probably not going to vote for them.
Yeah.
So what reason
so
do they have?
Clever.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but again, my amateur political analysis, perhaps that is a reason. But it's just interesting. I read into things, but I have a healthy or maybe an unhealthy dose of paranoia. So I read into it from my own point of view. So that's what were we talking about?
So funny.
We started, let's go a little bit chronological maybe. So we started, you went to school, you went to school for theater, and then what did you do after school? Like, did you, so you were like, you found your passion and you...
Yeah, I did theater, and then I started doing outdoor dramas. I did outdoor dramas in North Carolina and Kentucky, and then I did, I went to graduate school for 1 year to Purdue, which has a theater program, and I had a teaching assistantship there, and but I really was kind of a fish out of water in West Lafayette, Indiana, even though it was great. And I learned, you know, when you're from Miami, you're like this Jewish guy from Miami, and you go to West Lafayette, Indiana, you really learn about who you are. It's more about, you know, you learn about them, certainly. You learn about people that the Midwest, certainly. But you also learn about yourself, because, you know, I'm a rather large, loud person at times, and to be in that environment.
So Miami.
So, you know, boom. And then and they were just, you know, and there's a certain, you know, it's really a different mindset there. You know, you grow up in Miami, it's a different outlook on life. There, it's just very, there's more subdued and sincere.
Quiet.
And the people are sincere. I remember they were all looking out for me. I remember I come out of my apartment when it's snowing and it's freezing, and my car, you know, has ice on the windshield, and one of the theater people left an ice scraper on my windshield, and there I am scraping the ice off of my windshield to get to school.
And then you're like, maybe this is not for me.
You know, yes. So and then I'm in Indiana, and then I did the outdoor drama auditions in the Midwest, and I ended up doing The Legend of Daniel Boone in Kentucky, and then I'm in Kentucky, and I'm doing this play, and I'm in this little Harrodsburg, Kentucky, which is in between Louisville and Lexington. And there's another instance where I really had to learn about myself. It's a dry county, right? This is a dry county. So and we're all a bunch of decadent actors. And the actors, you know, we were in the drama. We were in the drama. They called it the drama. And we were probably the biggest revenue generator for that community for the entire year, because it was a 750-seat house. And they would come from Lexington and Louisville into that into that city to see The Legend of Daniel Boone. The outdoor drama scene in that area is big. It's historical dramas, and this is their heritage. So it's mm-hmm. very important, and people take it very seriously. I did the Lost Colony in the Outer Banks in North Carolina, Manio, and it's just that was a 2,000 seat theater, huge. You know, and you're not amplified, so you need big actors with big voices, which I was. And classically trained. I had studied Shakespeare in London and different things. So I did that. And again, that's a big revenue generator for that region. And there's people that do it every year, and you don't mess with that. That is very serious for them.
As people's livelihoods, yeah.
Those were fantastic experiences. In Harrodsburg, the actors live in the flop house. The homeless people live there when we're not there. And it's great, you know. So there were all kinds of different people there, and from all different walks of life, and we did that, and I got certified in stage combat there. We had one of the head of the stage combat, whatever that committee is, I forget, but he taught us, and it was great.
Sword fight or
fist fight? You had a sword fight and all kinds of stage combat with big, you know, rapiers and daggers and broadswords and the whole bit. Oh, I could do some damage in a fake way. and at that time, you know, I was quite, you know, I was athletic in nature, so, you know, I was able to do some cool stuff. As I've gotten older, I've become a little slower and a tad fatter, but we won't go there. But that was great, and I was there, and I had met I remember my father comes into town, and he's staying at the Beaumont Inn, which was the inn there. And there was this waitress there, and my father's, you know, he's loud, you know, I'm a loud, big, loud Jewish guy from Miami, and my father is even a louder Jewish guy from Miami, completely obnoxious and slightly less self-aware than I am. I hope he doesn't hear this, but or maybe I hope he does. I don't know.
Love you, Dad.
Love you, Dad. Love you, Dad. So he comes in, and I just wanted to stay. out of my business because, you know, I'm there trying to make my own way. And so he comes with his wife at the time, and he's staying there, and he's like, you got to meet this girl, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, Dad, come on, I'm doing this play. Leave me alone, da, 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 da. So I go, and they have this big buffet, you know, these Southern buffets. So I finally got bread pudding, the whole bit. So I go to the Southern buffet, and there she is, this girl, Gretchen. She was beautiful, and I met her, and I ended up dating her for the whole summer. And then I was like, I'm not going back to college. I'm moving to L.A. And she came with me with Gray.
Wow.
She was this Southern Baptist in this dry county. You know, we would have parties every night. After the show, every night, people were nominated to make a... The border was 45 minutes away, and there was a liquor store.
Explain to a European what a dry county... Does that mean you can't buy liquor?
No, there's no liquor. It's a dry county at all.
What about beer and wine?
No. You can't buy anything. There's nothing. It's a dry county. That's it. This is Southern.
Drink?
This is the Bible Belt. Well, you know, 45 minutes away, there's you can go. So, you know, listen, this is what state government is about. This is what local government's about. If you don't want to... If you want your county to be a dry county, that's what America is. You can do that there.
You vote for it.
You know, this isn't...
So you have to leave the county.
So the show would end at, let's say the show ended at 10:15, and the liquor store closed at 11. So we had, and it was 45 minutes away. So, you know, there was somebody nominated every night to drive. And, you know, sometimes it was me just get in your car, just drive. It's one road. So it's as fast as you can to the border to pick up as much alcohol as you can to bring back. I mean, it was a big cast. And we would have bonfires every night. I mean, it was incredible. It's incredible. I mean, doing those outdoor dramas is incredible. It's summer camp for actors.
But so you're allowed to drink the alcohol in a dry county. You just can't buy it?
Correct.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're allowed to drink it. Yeah, you're just not allowed to
drink what you could carry versus like continuous ever flowing amount. Yeah.
But so it was wild. It was a very the community was very interesting. I knew people that lived in trailers that I would hang out with. I went to black powder conventions in Indiana. You know, you want to talk about, you know, these are, you know, I mean, we're you know, we have our current president, and this is the base that that Hillary Clinton called deplorable. And I could understand why they didn't appreciate that. I met a lot of them, and some of them weren't my cup of tea, but some of them were very nice people. You know, I don't want to sound, it sounds like what Donald Trump said, but we don't like Donald Trump, and we're artists, and I don't want to say anything positive about him because that'll be the end of my life here. But I lived there, and I met a lot of cool people there and a lot of people in that region, and I understood their point of view on things, and they have their way of living, and we have our way of living, and I have my way of living, we hopefully as a country we can find common ground. And there are people that were not good. I mean, I saw a lot of stuff that was indeed deplorable when I was there at these black powder conventions. This is what the gun loopholes and buying guns at these conventions. So I was there, and they're selling the black powder. We had muzzle loaders in our show, so I learned how to pack these things with black powder and shoot them. This is, you know, what we had to do. So this was a part of their culture and their history. But these conventions, very anti-government, very, you know, this is the Waco, Texas people. These are people, the militias, very anti-government, anti-Jewish. You know, I certainly kept my, I'm not a very religious person, but I kept my culture to myself. It definitely wasn't a place where I wanted to be overly Jewish. That's for sure. So all those things are true in that environment. It was very enlightening, but a lot of those people were very nice. All kinds of different people.
Like Gretchen.
Oh, well, Gretchen.
So
I got to know her brothers, and I would go to the basketball courts at UK and play with them, and I knew her parents, and they were all very nice, and they really liked me. And they once said to her, they said, "We really like Aaron. Too bad he's going to hell." That's what they said to her. So that was...
They knew you were Jewish?
Too bad. We really like Aaron. Too bad he's going to hell. You know, she told me that, and it made sense. And I liked them. They were very nice people. But they genuinely thought I was going to hell because I wasn't Christian. So that was And then I ran away with their daughter. So that was, and she just packed up. It was like, yeah, getting in my car and just driving off to, I think we came back to Miami first and then drove to LA. And she was crazy. She was a rebel. She had to get out of that small town. There was, at that point in her life, there was nothing there for her. So then what?
Then you're in LA and then?
Then I'm in LA.
What did you do in LA?
Huh?
Like, what kind of things did you experience in LA? Because you mentioned like you were doing theater.
I was in LA for 10 years. I moved there with Gretchen. That didn't last all that long. So I moved to Venice right off the Circle, and we were there, and I knew an agent at a big agency, and he referred me to this guru acting teacher. So I was immediately in this acting class that had all of these kids of celebrities and different people that fashion models, big supermodels at the time were in my class, and other people that were movie stars were in my class, and we studied Meisner, and it was like and whatever intimidation I had at that moment, you know, you get rid of it because you're on stage with these with these people that are, you know, whatever your thinking is of what Hollywood was, and at that time it was different back then. This was before reality TV. I mean, movie, you know, it was, Hollywood was certainly significant, and it probably still is. And so I was in that class, and it was interesting. And this teacher was very hard on me, which was great, 'cause I probably needed that. And I learned Meisner acting, Meisner technique. And it taught me how to listen a lot better, how to listen and respond.
Do you know Meisner technique? Can you tell us a little bit? Is that where you feel your everything?
It starts off with these repeat exercises that you do with partners and so it's like, you know, oh, you're nodding your head, I'm nodding my head, you're nodding your head, I'm nodding my head, you're nodding your head, I'm nodding my head, oh, that upset me. So, you know, it goes and it changes, and it sounds sophomoric, but I mean, when you get into it, it's amazing.
You're responding
where
to other
it leads.
People.
I mean, yeah. I saw things that were earth shattering in that class, and I had earth shattering moments in that class whatever personality defects you have, you can't hide. You can't hide in these exercises. They come out.
It's like therapy, like group therapy.
It is. I mean, that's, you know, in the worst case scenario, it's therapy. I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is. Yeah, I mean, I think that when you're an actor, when you make this choice to be an actor, you're definitely searching for things in your own life. And certainly at that time in my life, I was. So you learn a lot about yourself, learn to listen. I was also in a classical company in Los Angeles. I was in a company that was in Topanga Canyon called the Theatrical Botanicum, that was started by Will Gear, who was Grandpa Walton back in the day. And these guys were kind of communists, and they were blackballed, and they went to Topanga Canyon in the woods and started a theater company. This is Woody Guthrie and Will Gear and a lot of other people. And they started a Shakespeare company in the woods of Topanga Canyon, and it's still there today. And I acted with them for, you know, maybe 6 years, and you know, I was doing, did some independent film, did a couple things here, commercial here and there, you know, nothing huge. Started writing and producing my own stuff, you know, but the market at that time was completely different. This was before there were, if you had something that was out of the norm, there were only two places you could put it, and that was Showtime or HBO. Those were the only two pay channels that were around back then. You know, you have a lot more options now.
So as I was writing, that's
what I was doing. And then I had another side job that helped me out. At that time, I was athletic and I was in great shape, and I worked as a trainer, and I had clients that were my clients from the moment I got there till the moment I left.
Wow. Like a personal trainer.
So I had about 10 clients that were my clients for 10 years.
That's wow. Amazing.
They were like my family members.
That's yeah. So great.
Oh, I love them, and they love me.
Do you still
me.
Stay in contact with them?
Not really. One or two, you know, one of them died.
Oh,
and
sorry.
This, you know, one of them I call every now and then. You know, you people, you know, you move on from
you
things.
Too.
But I did that, and then I had some family things back here in Miami, you know, real life family things that brought me back to like death, you know, that brought me back to Miami. And yeah, so family brought me back to Miami. And I moved back to North Miami, which is where I grew up. I went to North Miami Beach Senior High. Mm-hmm. And then I got into publishing. My friend made a lot of money in real estate, and he and I launched a magazine called Luxury Condo Living. And we were doing a lifestyle magazine about the condo lifestyle, the luxury condo lifestyle, which helped him because he had a condo business. And you know, me, I had all this LA, you know, vigor, and I brought that with me, and suddenly we're doing photo, you know, and I didn't know anybody at that time. I got to get back into the scene. I missed the 90s when all this crazy stuff happened. This is when I was in LA. So it was 2006 when I came back. I got into it in a hurry, and I met a lot of people real fast, and we had this magazine, and suddenly we're, you know, with a short amount of time, I remember we did a photo shoot with George Perez. I'm like, we're gonna do photo shoots, we're gonna do production, blah, blah, blah. This is before it was so common, you know, so we did a photo shoot with George Perez and at the Icon South Beach, and I had him next to a gnome, and you know, and we talked about art. I wrote the article called Artistically Related, we did that and photo shoot with him, and then the next issue I did
that
a photo.
Was for the magazine.
Oh, that was for the magazine. George Perez, boom, right on the cover, and then it wasn't common at that point. Now it's like, oh, big deal. George Perez is everywhere, but at that point, that wasn't necessarily the case. And then I did a photo shoot with Edgardo de Fortuna from Fortune, and I shot him and his family and in their home, and people just gravitated and they gave me this access right off the bat. And I was very lucky. And then the real estate crash happened in 2007, 2008. And what made my friend's company so unique was the fact that if you searched Miami real estate, Miami condos, in Google, he was at the top of the search engine. He was at the cutting edge of that at the time. And he had a company called The Condo Company. And all of his, so he was getting like these, he sold penthouses off of leads from the internet. Because whatever you typed in for Miami at that time, his company was at the top. Mm-hmm. You know, and so he was at the forefront of search engine optimization. I learned a lot from him and that experience about search engine optimization, about internet marketing. You know, I saw it right there. We were doing a print pub, but I was seeing what he was doing with his real estate platform. So what was interesting was we saw the real estate crash happening in real time because we were able to see it from search engine results. Mm-hmm. And we noticed, we saw that there was a dip before it was happening. And so we knew, you know, so the writing was on the wall for my print publication about the condo community. It was that wasn't going to last very much longer. But I created a partnership with, we were a media sponsor for the IKF Latin American Art Auction, which benefited Jackson Memorial Hospital.
Those bridges, yeah.
Yeah, so, and through there, I met the chair of that was this woman, Rosie Consuelo, who's still out there. And through Rosie, I met Melanie Cohen, who was the founder of Social Miami. And she was looking for someone to partner with, and she had this platform, and she had this great distribution list of the, and it was all based on the high end philanthropy scene and the donors, and creating an event. She had an events newsletter, and the charities would send her pictures from the events, and she would send them out in the newsletter, and it was there, and it was a great name, and it was a great concept, and she had the list, and there was definitely a foundation there. It wasn't a magazine per se at that point. It was events. Mm-hmm. and the website
as well, like to
socialmiami.com. It's still there. I saw the strengths and I saw the weaknesses, and I wrote out a business plan. It was a page and a half about, you know, here are the strengths, here are the weaknesses, here's what I think we should do, because I knew this magazine was ending, right? Mm-hmm. And I needed to find my next thing, and I couldn't, you know, I'm not the kind of person that can really have a real job, so I had to create something for myself in that moment, and the stakes, and I had to stay in media, you know. Mm-hmm. If I left media, then everything I did in LA was for nothing, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So I had to stay in media. So so I said, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna create the Ocean Drive of the internet. That's what we're gonna do. And because at that time, even for the national publications, their websites were to download the media kit. Mm-hmm. It was about selling ads for the print pub. It wasn't about creating content, for the internet. So I really felt like, hey, this is an opportunity to really do something different and create an online glossy magazine. Mm-hmm. And that's because I had just done that. I had just done a glossy magazine. I go, well, let's do that same structure online. And Melanie was down. And we redesigned it with that in mind, and put it back out there with this new structure, with the newsletter, and boom, it took off. And I started creating initiatives that highlighted the social people, and some things I was very proud of, and we created at that time, shortly thereafter, you know, she had things that were in different places, but I figured out ways to bring them together. We created the Gala Guide, which was an incredible thing, an index of all the galas, and it's still definitive right now to this day, and the charities all bought into it, And then I created initiatives, like, for instance, with Onare in the design district, Claudio Faria, who runs it at the time. He was the director. He was in his early 20s. He was 24 years old. He's like, Aaron, how do we get the ladies in here? So he wanted, you know, the rich women to come into his high-end luxury closet store. Like, duh. And I was like, well, why don't we create fashion segments where the women come in and they hang their clothes up in your closet vignettes and we film them talking about their fashion style. Well, she's like, let's do it. Well, that worked. We did that for 6 years. Wow. That worked like a charm. And they all came in. I don't know if he sold any closets from doing it, but he may have. And he's selling $40,000 closets. So when you're selling $40,000 closets, you got to get those people in the store. We did that, and it was great. We created different things just like that. And then I started to create initiatives where we would do interview series, and I would have everyone come in at one time, and we would, you know, be it whether it was video or whether it was just a written editorial with images, whatever it was, you know, creating things where we would find a location, bring influential people to a single location, and that was very beneficial for a lot of different businesses to get those people in there, and then to get the added distribution of the content, which at that time was not common. Like, now it's like big deal. Like, you mm-hmm. can't give it away now because it's like a dime a dozen right now, but at that time it was not. So I really think we forged new ground in that regard. And I created the Art Basel Guide. We created the Art Basel Guide. And for many years on Social Miami, Social Miami was optimized because one of the key components for optimization is longevity. So Social Miami was launched in 99. Mm-hmm. So it had that longevity. So it was organically placed in Google. So when we launched the Art Basel Guide, that went completely viral. And you know, people from New York were passing it around. They were passing it around. And then not only that, but if you typed in Art Basel Miami events, Art Basel parties, it was number one. So there was a minute, and at that time, you know, I wasn't necessarily so well versed in the visual arts. I always had an appreciation for it, and I was always attracted to artists and art and that environment. But I can't say I was an expert or anything. But and I'm still not an expert. I certainly have my opinions, but at that time we created that, and I would write about Art Basel from my own perspective. Is like I remember when I went to my first Art Basel, which was in 2008, and you know, keep in mind, I grew up in my, you know, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s in Miami. There was no culture here. There was nothing, you know, it was desolate. So I mean, especially visual arts, I mean, forget about it. So it was, for me to go to the convention center and to go to the Vernissage at that time, and that was before I was knowledgeable enough to know that there's actually a preview that happens before the Vernissage. Like, so the Vernissage is like not even the real VIP thing. So I had to learn these things. But I went to the Vernissage, and I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I was just blown away, and it was like, it was crazy. And I think it was, and the whole city, the design district, I mean, just shut down. And it was like nothing I had ever seen. I was like, what is going on here? You know, and at that point, I guess I was back in Miami a couple of years. So,
changed it.
And then I just became obsessed with it to some extent. I was like, I'm documenting, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so I did Social Miami for 9 years, and I was the publisher, and I created a lot of content for it as well. So it was a time, and so I was able to Social Miami at that time, and maybe it still does, transcended groups. Everyone was a part of it in some way, you know, arts. You know, all the different groups were a part of it, and I would start to categorize people by what group they were in, you know, by what charity they were. Like, I would meet random people, and I go, oh, and I would tell them what charities they're a part of, and they're like, whoa, how do you know that? And I was like, oh, that's my job. But, you know, so I would meet all these people, and so I knew people by what charities they were in. Younger people, I knew them by what high schools they were a part of and the different cliques, and high schools are based on a lot of things, economics and religion and a lot of different things. So, you know, I was able to meet people and know exactly what groups they were a part of. And
in our city, it's pretty big.
It was great. We were able to highlight people, and I was able to discover new social people and bring them into the scene if I saw someone that, and they would get involved in the nonprofit sector at that level. And it's an interesting thing. There's so much about the nonprofit sector and the high-end elite society world that's interesting. It all kind of comes through there to some extent. Things disseminate from there, and they come down to everybody, because that's where the power structure is. And I learned all that. You know, I didn't grow up with that.
I think there's a lot of things that you learned. I think not just as a theater major, like eventually going to be parts of theater groups, eventually going to out LA, learning about business related things. It's like all these little kind of like tools that you started picking up through the trade, eventually coming back to Miami, learning things through Social Miami that you were writing. All these little eventually led you to what you're doing now.
Yeah, led me to what I'm doing now.
Can we talk a little bit about that, about being, instead of in front of an audience and performing and having a certain role as actor or whatever, what have you, versus being behind the camera? And I do feel it's artistic, even though you say it's not artistic. There's a certain way things have to be captured and shot and put together, and the capacity mentally to orchestrate those things is pretty big. Not everybody could do it, like editing and stuff. How is it that you feel the shift has happened for you?
Well, you know, I was doing Social Miami. I was pitching ideas, and people would say, oh, we like it, but we don't really want that for Social Miami. We don't really want that from Social Miami. So I had all these things I wanted to do, and to some extent, the fact that I was doing Social Miami wasn't allowing me to do them because people, you know, looked at that as a very specific thing. This is about the nonprofit sector and society at that level. It's not about doing a documentary about the bakehouse or whatever, you know, or whatever the subject matter is. So after 9 years, I had had my fill of the social scene. It's the same circuit year after year after year. And you're out all night, you're drinking, and it wasn't what I want. You know, where I was a trainer in LA, now I'm fat and out of shape and drinking every night. So it wasn't good, and I didn't like I didn't like that. So I made the decision to, you know, there were other things that played into it. My mother had passed, and there were different things that kind of just led me to not really to make a change. And I had gotten involved in the Miami Theater Center with Stephanie Anson. After my mother passed, she opened that theater to me, and we did a... And I started to get involved there, and I took a movement class that Octavio Campos was doing, and that got me moving again, right? And I was so out of shape, and I really wasn't, you know, I was just out of shape and depressed and all these things. So I started moving again, and I was in the theater. Suddenly I was back in the theater, and Stephanie's still a good friend of mine to this day, and I thank her for that. And it gave me focus again and grounding, and then we decided to do this this reading. We did a charity reading. Louis Aguirre and I read True West, and I was still doing Social Miami at the time, and so it really turned into a thing, and everyone came, and I don't think people realized that I was an actor. They didn't know that. So when they, and I was a decent, I'm a decent actor. So when they saw me, it was like, whoa, oh, Aaron Glickman, what the hell's that? So I did that, and then Stephanie saw it, and he's like, whoa, you know, let's get back on stage. What are you doing? She had this this thing that she had done in college where she adapted The 7-Year Itch and made it into this crazy thing with Marilyn Monroe and all this stuff, and Stephanie in such a great way is crazy, and she had all that, she had all this that she was putting into it, and she just said, hey, you want to do this play, A 7-Year Itch? And, you know, it was a mammoth role. I mean, mammoth. I mean, on stage, the whole, for 2.5 hours. Just a mammoth role.
It's a long time.
Oh, it was huge. And you know what? I was just at a point in my life, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. You know, fuck it. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
So I did it, and so you know, obviously, while I'm doing this, I'm not publishing Social Miami. When you do a play, it takes so much of your time, and it's everything. You know, it's
immersive,
everything.
Yeah.
So it was everything, and then it was a 5-week run, and it was a six, and the theater, the way it was set up, is we did a 6-week rehearsal, which is uncommon in professional theater. So. But because of the way the theater was set up and whatnot, we were able to do it. So I did that, and that got me back on my feet. And we did the play, and it was a success. I mean, I think we did a great, great show, and a lot of people came that wouldn't have ordinarily come, and a lot of people saw me in a way that they had never seen me before. And then at the same time, I was starting to shoot more and more. Docu-style stuff,
and then
obviously I'm pulling away from Social Miami, and that probably put a strain on my relationship with the woman who founded it, and you know, and she and I are friends now, but I was pulling away, and she, you know, so that was that. So I at some point I made this, we mutually made the decision that I wasn't going to really be a part of it anymore, and I stepped away, and I launched a thing called Current, and not to Current dot Miami, because you have that dot Miami at the end. I wasn't trying to copy Social Miami, but it turns out that it's Current Miami because it's a dot Miami. So it just was that, you know, if anything would be a dot Miami, anything's Miami if it's dot Miami. So
I didn't even know that there is such a thing as dot Miami.
There is. There's a thing. It's, dot Miami.
www.com. You can do it. Dot Miami.
You can do that. So,
I had no idea. We
so I did
do that.
So wow. I did Current dot Miami, and the purpose of it was just to have an outlet so I could retain my voice and create documentary content about Miami, you know, just different things. And
what you wanted, him.
Yeah, what I wanted. And there's some crossover with what we do with Social Miami, but not a lot. You know, I wanted to cover, you know, and I wanted to cover different things. I had, you know, covering, you know, wealthy people and their Good Endeavors was great, and I did that. And now it's time to cover other things. So so I started to do that and work more in production and learn more about production and acquire more equipment, acquire more things. And where I used to, and with my theater training, I'm very good with structure. That's one thing I'm very good at. So I would always sit with my editors and go, bop, bop, put this here, put that there, put this.
How you visualize.
So then I just
it.
Taught, when Adobe came out with the Adobe Cloud, with the cloud, I got that. And I just taught myself the software, and then I started to edit my own content. So, that was it. And I just started to create more and more documentary content that I was able to do myself. And
you shoot it yourself as well.
I shoot some of it myself. I don't shoot all of it myself. Sometimes I get shooters. If there's a budget, I get shooters. You know, if I'm covering somebody one-on-one, like I did with you guys when mm-hmm. I covered your show at Swamp Space, it's just us in a room. If I'm covering an artist...
In
their studio. You know, that's a very intimate thing.
It makes it more intimate, more
personalized,
private or personal. It creates this... like a safe space more, right? That way you don't have to be so nervous or you get
safe
closer.
Space. So it's just me and you hanging out.
Yeah.
And once they feel, and it takes a while. You know, you don't want to sit someone down and start bombarding them with questions.
Totally.
So for me, it was about studying process, which now everyone's doing. But I'm studying process and I'm in there with them and I'm shooting it. I'm just doing it handheld. And you hang out with someone for an hour or two and they feel comfortable. And when you get, and this goes back to Meisner training. When you're doing an activity, right? When an actor's doing an activity, and they're not thinking about their lines, right? They're doing their activity. So they're concentrating on something else besides themselves. So I like to capture people doing that. And so now they're not concentrating on what they're saying to me. They're concentrating on their activity and the words come out organically.
Nuances and gestures, yeah.
Exactly. And I'm able to, and through capturing, and I don't need to see the whole project, through just capturing somebody doing one part of a project, you can learn all about that person.
Yeah.
So you see what their technique is. You see their attention to detail. You hear what they have to say. So that's my point of view in cat. So yeah, with those, it's me and the person, and I'm shooting, and I enjoy that very much. If it's big productions and there's budgets, which I get now, which I've been getting, so I'll hire a shooter, I'll hire assistants. If it's event coverage, I'll certainly hire a shooter. I'm not going to be running around with a camera. You know, you hire
pick and choose, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, sometimes I like to shoot. Sometimes it's definitely advantageous to have someone shooting for you. And I'm fortunate because my brother, who's a lot younger than I am, I have a brother who's 20 years younger than I am, and he's in the same thing. He's an animator now, and he also shoots. And so I'm able to hire him a lot to shoot for me, which is great. And he just shot something for me tonight, actually. So so that's, you know, while I'm out, you know, I was at the opening thing for NAPTI trying to muster up new business. So I got to still muster up new business, and there's a gig, and so I can send him to shoot. So this is, that's been an evolution. And and it culminated, you know, 2 years ago, I shot a documentary about Art Basel and a feature that premiered at the Miami Film Festival this past year in 2019. And it's a good piece. I'm happy with it. We had a lot of the people in it who were responsible for bringing Art Basel to Miami and talking about it. But what really came about from doing that doc, and it's funny, when you start doing a doc like that, you know, you got to follow it. You know, you may have an idea of what it is, but things change and you need to follow it. So really think what changed while we were shooting was this the impact that art has had on the city of Miami. The scene that started in the 80s with things like Young Arts, the symphony, the ballet, the book fair, all these things started in the 80s. Then in the 90s, Lincoln Road, Craig Robbins, Bonnie Clearwater, and then Art Miami, opening up the Latin Market, and then that evolving into Art Basel sniffing around, and then suddenly, and them coming well, what was supposed to be 2001, but 9/11 stopped that, and they started in 2002. But there was an art scene that was happening. There was a foundation that got Art Basel's attention. Then Art Basel comes, and through a whole, there was drama there, and a lot of important people in Miami helped make it happen. Norman Brayman being the main person, who was the chair of Art Basel host committee until last year. So they got it here, and it was something that was brought here by the collectors, because we have such a strong collecting community here in Miami, which is very important for the artists too. So there are collectors here, so all that. So and because Art Basel came, and because we were able to get these enormous collectors from around the world to come to Miami all at one time, now for almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's reshaped the city. I mean, then the Knight Foundation and their emphasis. Then they got on board and started funding artists and initiatives. So,
where do you see yourself going forward? I guess before we ask our last question, like, where do you see yourself in the next, or where do you want to push your projects or your future endeavors?
I need to create more initiatives that make money, and I need to, and I want to have more things that are on a national level and not just in local. Miami. Even if I shoot it here in Miami, it has to have some sort of impact outside of the city. I've covered this city now for over a decade, and I'd like to expand that and
continue to grow. Mm-hmm.
And continue to grow. That's it. I'm not getting any younger, and none of us are. So yeah, I just want to continue to grow and learn and meet interesting people and I enjoy it. I just want to keep doing what I enjoy and being able to afford to do it. So, you need to make money. So it's you can be an artist, but if you're not making money, then you got to make money. That's just a part of reality.
Somehow
you need to make money. So, I need to come up with initiatives that definitely generate sustain that. You can have your passion projects, but sometimes you just need to go do the nuts and bolts things, just simple production work to make money. So, all these things need to, and I just need to continue to grow and getting clients. I have some great clients that sustain me, and I need to continue to build that base and continue to do initiatives and
make it to the next level.
And it doesn't all have to be film. I mean, it could be it could be real estate. It could be whatever it is. Just continue to do projects that are passionate to me and work with people that I want to work with. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. If you're working with people that you don't want to work with, that's where you get into issues.
Yeah, but
if you're working with people, when you're working with people that you want to work with and that that are your friends,
you enjoy it so much more.
Oh, yeah. And look, I've worked with people that weren't my friends and the product was great. And I've worked with people who were my friends and the product wasn't great. So the two are, there's no rules.
It's so true. It's not always you correlate it with the quality of the friendship, right?
The very
last question is, and I think you answered it already, most of it. You've been sitting on a magical rocking chair. And it grants you three wishes. You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for them to come true.
Oh,
so what are your three wishes? I think I already heard probably three, but it's official.
Now it's official. I don't even know what I said. What do I wish? I wish that
silence.
I don't know what I wish. I don't like to reveal too much about what my desires are. I wish that I have worthwhile relationships and I continue to build those. And
when?
And I wish that I continue to have health.
Dude, that's a good one.
And I wish that I wish that the people around me that are important to me prosper as well. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things that I wish for.
Wonderful.
That's nice. Thank you very much for sitting with us tonight, Aaron. And for those of you that are interested to find out more information, current.miami.
www.current.miami. Dot Miami.
It's still so up cool. and functioning. You'll definitely find a lot of, I think, important docuseries of just what's going on in our current community, culturally here, just artists, musicians, just a little bit of everything. It's really just the way that it's shot. I enjoy it very much. It's not high production and then like you're like, where am I? But you feel like you're there. You feel like you're actually getting to connect to these individuals, and it's more personal. It feels very real in that mm-hmm. respect. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we're excited to see where you go forward and what you do with Tour City, and hopefully bring people in and as well as take what you're doing
connect
now
to outside,
out to yeah. the outside. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Fabulous. Right. Thank you for having me. I loved
thank
it.
You. Thank you for sitting with us.
And thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Maria.
Thank
and
you, Lisa.
We already said happy 2020 before, so I guess welcome back, everybody.
Happy New Year. Did we say that already?
I think last time, just the one time. And if you have any more information or you'd like to maybe donate, we have donate button on our website. It keeps us going. Thank you to those that donated for Go Miami, right? Go Miami
Give
Day.
Give Miami Day.
We were able to cover our website and
SoundCloud
for this year, because this is a very DIY project ourselves. We don't get paid. So thank you guys so much, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.